Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Lyft, the ride-sharing service that's a smart way to earn extra money. Get a $500 new driver bonus by driving with Lyft. Check it out at Lyft.com/campfire. That's Lyft.com/campfire. Limited time only. Restrictions apply. Thanks, Lyft. This episode of Jim Harold's Campfire is also brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/campfire and enter the promo code Campfire. Again, that's $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/campfire and enter that promo code Campfire. Thanks, Casper.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I am Jim Harold, and I am so excited to be with you. Can't you tell it in my voice? Well, I got to tell you, another great series of calls. You guys have been calling in such great stories, and thank you so, so much for it. We appreciate it. Another thing we would appreciate briefly here is if you subscribe to the podcast. That means wherever you listen, if they give you the option like they do in iTunes and on the podcast app on your iPhone and your iPad and so forth, they say there's a place to subscribe. Please go do that because that helps us rocket up the charts. Also, if you would rate us, which is nice, 4 or 5 stars, hopefully, and then review, which is even nicer, 2 or 3 sentence review. That really brings people in and say, hey, I'm going to give this show a chance. And that's really the only way that we're going to keep up. We have all the big companies coming in and doing their podcasts because they kind of got this gold. I think there's a gold rush on now because people see that podcasting is the real deal. And the only way that we can stay competitive in these categories, they have a lot of non-paranormal shows from all the big names, the three-letter networks, I won't name them, you know who they are, they're coming in. The only way we're going to stay competitive is with your help, and that's the way that you can help, by just simply subscribing wherever you're listening. Rate it wherever you listen. Review wherever you listen. Share it in your Facebook groups. Tell your friends, and that's how we will keep the campfire burning brightly, and we will feature stories like this. Chris is on the line from Illinois, and he has some tales of strange experiences in his childhood home. And we're so glad to have him with us. He found out about us from those good folks over at the Astonishing Legends podcast. So by all means, please check them out. Chris, welcome to the show and tell us what happened in your childhood home.
Well, thank you, Jim. We had a lot of really weird things that happened to me and my siblings, and I guess I'll cut right to the chase because there was a lot that happened. So it started out just a lot of, you know, normal haunting type of things, footsteps, that sort of thing. In fact, a lot of times it was loud enough that I thought someone might be breaking into the house.
Oh my!
Which is what I was always worried about. But it quickly ramped up from there. Some of the things that I noticed when I was in the house, well, first of all, I guess it's useful to mention that the way the second floor of our house worked, you kind of walked up the stairs and it dead ended into a hallway, and you could go right and there were some bedrooms.
Yeah.
And then if you went left, there was a bathroom and an office. And then the third room there was sort of a storage room that my dad used to collect antiques. And that was, that area of the house was the one that was definitely where we saw most of the unexplained phenomena that we saw. So, some of the things that I saw, first of all, one time I was, and I, you know, it's funny looking back on it. I never thought about this before, but, it's strange to me now. I used to always walk up to that storage room and just kind of open the door and look in and then just walk away. And I never really figured out why I used to do that, but I used to do it pretty often. And one time when I did it, I opened the door and there was a xylophone in the corner. And I heard the xylophone just make this really loud, clear sound as if someone had taken the striker and just kind of run it all the way across the xylophone.
Oh, it's, so it's not, it wasn't just like one little ding. It was like,
no, no, it was exactly like that. Yeah. Yeah. And exactly like that from low to high. And there was no one in the room. And I, of course, took off running. Another time with that same room, my brother and I were kind of, you know, messing around in the hallway. We were kids at the time. I think I was probably like 10. And I think I walked towards that door again for the same reason. And, as I went towards it, the door handle started jiggling back and forth really quite violently as if someone was trying to open it. And, there was no one else in the house except for my mother at the time. I checked with my brother and, he remembers the exact same thing. My dad was away on business and, my mom was in the other room talking on the phone. And, so of course we also ran that time too. The office in that same hallway, I would always like to go and play on the computer in there. It was the only computer in the house at the time. And this was late 90s or something, so I was always really excited to get on AOL. But
the good old days.
But I always had to, yeah, exactly. But I always had to balance that with the fact that I had a very strong sensation of being stared at from the hallway. And I've never had that before or since. But it was always just in that room. Now my brother also had maybe even more crazy experiences. First of all, he always had nightmares in that house where he would die, and he would have them pretty frequently. They'd always be different, but he would always die. And those stopped. I'm sorry?
He said that's frightening.
Yes, yeah. And those thankfully stopped when we moved, and he was still young at the time when we moved. So we didn't think it was just from him being a you know, a little kid. And also, you know, another kind of thing that was very frightening was the fact that one time I woke up in the morning and noticed he was in my bed, and we had bunk beds. I was on the top, and you know, it was very strange for him to have climbed up into my bed. So I asked him what happened, and he said, "Well, I woke up and there were three black dogs sitting at the foot of my bed with glowing red eyes, just staring at me." And since then, I've kind of thought maybe, you know, maybe it's sleep paralysis, that kind of thing happens. But, you know, he said he could move at the time when he saw these dogs, and he actually could still see them staring at him when he had climbed out of his bed.
Oh, my goodness.
So that one really, he had trouble sleeping for a long time after that one.
I can see why.
Yeah. You know, a lot of those kinds of things are usually sorts of... seen as death omens, but I'm happy to say that those never came to fruition. So that's lucky. But he also saw shadow people too. So he had a little bit of everything. He once saw one floating through our family room and just sort of stood there and looked at him for a second, and then just kind of slowly floated through the room and disappeared through a wall. He also saw one in the bathroom upstairs in that same hallway, just staring at him from the shower curtain. And this was kind of one of those bathrooms, you know, first of all, it's on the second floor. Second of all, it has no real window, so not really a good chance for shadows to appear. And then lastly, my sister probably had the most interesting experience of all. She was born a little bit later. And we converted the storage room for the antiques into her bedroom. And when she was about two, she started sort of every once in a while, she would look up at the ceiling and sort of smile and laugh and as if she was watching something. Hmm. And she would almost sort of interact with something, like something was talking to her. And so we'd ask her, "What, you know, what are you seeing?" And occasionally she would say birds, mm-hmm. But much more often she would call them the guys.
Huh.
And so, yeah, we would ask her about this and she would see them all the time. She never gave a very clear description of what they were, but she called them the guys, and she said that they'd fly around and they'd tell her things and make her laugh. And I think the most interesting part of it was, at one point right before we moved, she was looking up and laughing as if she had seen them again. And then all of a sudden she kind of looked around puzzled as if they'd laughed or something.
Oh my.
And then she started running around the house, you know, kind of yelling for them. Hey guys, where are you guys? And she never mentioned them again after that. And I thought that was interesting because for a 2-year-old to kind of stick to that continuity, you know, it didn't make me think that it was fake. And I asked her about it recently. And of course she was, like I said, probably 2 at the time or something like that. So she actually doesn't remember almost any of it, but she does remember that last part running around the house, being confused as to where these entities had gone.
No, there's no question about that. That is pretty wild. Now, let me ask you, what happened with the childhood home? Did your family sell it? Do you still have it? When did all of this end?
So we moved out probably when I was about, I want to say 12 or 13, something like that. And my brother was a little bit younger, and my sister was still really young, probably like still a toddler. And everything stopped after that. Like I said, my brother stopped having these nightmares immediately. None of us ever had any other strange experiences after that. I was a little too young at the time, but I always wanted to kind of go back and sort of check up with the other owners of the house and see if they had seen anything. But unfortunately, I didn't do that.
Well, it must have kind of given you a lifelong fascination with these topics, because you were a faithful listener to The Campfire.
Yes, it definitely did. I've always wanted to kind of try to figure some of this stuff out ever since, you know, sort of experiencing all of that. Certainly a lot of different random things that happened, so I always wanted to try to piece it together.
It's a fascinating topic, and you know, I've been at the podcasts now, well, almost 12 years now, which is hard to believe, and I think
wow.
I almost have more questions than I do answers, but it is a fascinating journey, and thank you for joining us in that journey and on The Campfire tonight and sharing your story.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Lyft, the ride-sharing service that's a smart way to earn extra money. And I'm going to tell you how you can get a $500 new driver bonus by driving with Lyft. I love Lyft. I think you will too. Now, I love being a customer of Lyft. It's so convenient. If you want to have a night on the town and don't have to worry about parking and who's going to drive and yada, 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 you don't have to worry about it because of Lyft. But there's another side to it too. Lyft allows a lot of people to make some extra money. For example, are you in between jobs and looking to earn some income? Maybe you want to put some money in your child's college fund. Maybe you're going back to school, or maybe you want to write the great American novel. Alternative funding for your startup. I love entrepreneurialism. Whatever it is, you can drive with Lyft and make extra money. It's the ride-sharing app that lets you be your own boss, pick your own hours, and earn up to $1,500 a week driving your own car. Now, there are other ride-sharing apps out there, but Lyft treats their drivers right. It's a flexible way to make extra money anytime from nearly anywhere, and all you need is a car. Lyft drivers can make up to $35 an hour, and getting started is just a tap away. You can drive mornings, nights, weekends, just to flip into driver mode and start making some money. Now, plus, Lyft drivers can earn tips right through the app, and those add up fast. And you don't have to wait days or weeks to get paid. No, you can cash out instantly once you've made $50 thanks to ExpressPay. Now, it all adds up to you making more money in your pocket. And it all adds up. Driving with Lyft is super flexible, and it allows you to keep 100% of your tips, and it's always there when you need the extra cash. So here is how you take advantage of what I told you about that extra $500 bonus by driving with Lyft. Sign up today at Lyft.com/campfire. That's Lyft.com/campfire. And right now, Lyft has a special offer for our listeners. you'll get a $500 new driver bonus after you complete 100 rides within 30 days. So go to Lyft.com/campfire today so you can start making extra money and get your $500 new driver bonus. That's Lyft.com/campfire. I think you're going to love it. This is a great new entrepreneurial way to make income. I love it. It's a great part of the new economy, and I think it's fantastic, and I think that it could help you out. So check it out. Drive with Lyft. Limited time only. Restrictions apply. Thanks, Lyft. Next up on the campfire, love to hear from international callers, and we have one on the line right now, Tim from the UK. He's been listening for about a month. A friend of his, longtime campfire fan, introduced him to the show, so thank you. And Tim's going to tell us about a spooky tour that he took in Sydney, Australia. Tim, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us, and tell us what happened.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for having me. Yeah, this was something that happened probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I used to live in Australia, and my wife and I were always used to be into haunted places, mm-hmm. and always wanted to do a tour, but we didn't want to do any of the ones where people sort of dress up and jump out at you. So as a surprise, I got we both got tickets to the quarantine station, which is it's in Sydney, but it's sort of on the head as you sort of as if you were sailing into Sydney, because Sydney is just surrounded by the sea. So the quarantine station was it was started about 1830. There's a bit of background. About 1830, and it was literally to get when everyone came off the ships, they had to spend about 40 days there because of things like the Spanish influenza and sure. plague. And so it's based over quite a large acreage and lots of houses, separate buildings. They also had very strange sort of class systems. So the first class had really nice places to stay, and it went down to sort of second and third and steerage sort of class. Depending how much money you had to stay at the quarantine station. So we went on an overnight tour, which was that you started about 9 o'clock at night and you went through to about 4 in the morning. And so we were meant to sort of sleep a little bit at the end of the tour until mm-hmm. we got picked up to go back to the car park. So we put our bags in this very big old building. It was just basically a hallway with rooms off to the left and right, and everyone was chatting. And the people that were taking us around were sort of they were mediums. They weren't just sort of people to take us around the tour. They were mediums as well, and they sort of asked the group, "Oh, who's staying on the right hand side as you go into the hall?" And a few people put their hands up, and they said, "Oh, you might have an interesting night because a ghost called the matron, doesn't like men sleeping what was or used to be the nurses' quarters." So that was a funny start. But we went down to places like the mortuary, and we went to there's meant to be a very haunted place, which is the old shower block, which is a very strange sort of setup with lots of corrugated little showers that people used to have to come off and wash before they went anywhere else. I guess was the thought that people were carrying diseases. I didn't see anything there, but apparently there's been photos of a weird sort of shape of a man wearing a hat. Meant to be a bit of an evil sort of feeling there. So we went around all the different buildings, and we went into it was the kitchen area that was below the big dining room, and we were told about what went on and the different sort of presences there. And apparently this pantry for storing cold food was quite an evil area, apparently. And I went in, I didn't really feel anything because I'm not really sure if I'm that really sensitive to these things. But I took a whole load of photos with my SLR, with the flash, one after the other, quite a lot. And it was only a few days later when I went to look at the photos that in a few of the shots before were fine. The window was a bit dirty, but they were continuous. Nothing really changed. Then a couple of shots in the middle, this sort of grey, sort of weird liquid seemed to be sort of coming down one of the window panes. So that was a bit of a strange. And then after the shots, it wasn't there. So that was a strange one. And they did say that it was quite a bit of the pantry was an area that people didn't like standing in. So that I found out was quite interesting. We also then went into a smaller room where there was meant to be a presence of a little boy, and we all sat. I mean, I had my headlamp torch with a red light on it, and they sort of had a few toys there, which apparently the presence likes to sort of play with. Mm. And they put this ball in the middle of the room, and it was a kind of a one of those sort of felt colourful balls, and it wasn't really inflated enough, so it sort of was flat as when they put it on the floor. And as we were sitting there, and it was in the middle of the room, it did start to rock as if it was trying to be pushed, which was another interesting one. But the main one for me was that happened to me was that we, at the end of the whole tour, we went back to our room where we'd put our bags, and we slept on this bed. It was very old, sort of metal tubed bed, and by this point we've been up all day and the night, so we're really tired, just fell straight asleep. And I must have been sort of sleeping on my right hand side, resting my head on my hand, so I guess my arm was making a sort of an A shape. And just sometime early in the morning, I just suddenly felt this pull on my arm. Mm. And sort of it just put me out of sleep straight away. And I'm just being so tired that I just didn't think anything of it and went right back to sleep, and which was strange because there was no curtains in the room and it was already in the morning. And the light in Australia is quite bright in the first thing in the morning, so I must have been so tired that I went straight back to sleep, didn't think about it. Got back in the van to be taken back to the car the next morning, and one of the people that had taken us around that night was driving. She said, "Oh, you know, did anything happen when you went to sleep?" And I suddenly sort of remembered this, and I told her, and she said, "Oh, that's probably Matron that's waking you up so you can have your medicine." And apparently, this is a very sort of, people have had other sort of things of being like woken up and feeling as if they've been sat upright, been held upright in the bed. So that was my main big, and it's to this day I feel that it was such a pull on my arm.
Sure.
That, you know, it wasn't just sort of sort of waking up, or you know, there was no, and I was straight from sleep to awake. There was no sort of dozing, and it was just a very strange sort of pull on the arm. But it was quite interesting that the person that took us around was quite casual about it, as if it just happens all the time.
Oh my gosh. Now the thing is that, and we've heard other similar stories, actually something very similar from Australia from the very early days of the podcast, probably back in 2009, about somebody studying to be a doctor. And there was apparently this ghost doctor who would call out the interns, and make their rounds and knock on the door. So kind of this stern kind of, spirit, I guess, kind of a like the Matron.
Yes, yeah, and apparently she there's been stories of that if you, I think there was a story about somebody that commented on one of the old baths that was there, how dirty it was and how Matron wasn't keeping a good look on things, and then he had to run out and felt really quite ill and had to run outside. So apparently if you sort of question any of, you know, how the buildings look or the cleanliness, this Matron is quite a stern sort of presence.
Well,
but,
quite
an interesting one.
I won't say anything against the Matron if you don't.
No.
Hey, Matron, we're cool. We're cool. Now,
yeah,
you said you said you had another, well, you called it, you have a beard, you called it a beard scratcher.
A beard scratcher, a head scratcher, yes. This was a friend of mine, and her parents live in Wales, which is in England, but in the countryside. And it's not an old house. I think actually her dad built it probably only about 20 years ago. But her mum had a very strange thing where she was, one night there was no one else in the house, and she was sitting at the sofa watching television. And when it came to finish, she just turned off the TV. She went to get a drink, turn off lights, just a normal thing of going to bed. Went up to bed, lay down. Then she woke up and she was sitting at the sofa where the TV was still on, the lights were still on. And she just thought, well, that was it's a bit strange. I must have been sort of dozing in front of the TV, so she turned off the TV and she did the whole thing and went back to bed again. Then she woke up again and she was in front of the TV again. And she's thought, this is very, a bit strange. And she turned, did all the thing again and went to bed and then woke up again. So it happened about six times continuously. And apparently the very last time that she sort of woke up and sitting in, on the sofa, she just ran straight to bed, didn't turn off the TV or any of the lights, just went straight to bed. And my friend's brother doesn't like living in this house. Apparently he sort of, he likes to sleep with something like a, you know, a golf club or something near him in the bed. He doesn't like to like live in, sleeping there. And this is sort of like the family home. So none of the, my friend or her brother sort of, they're sort of in their 40s now. So they don't stay there anymore. But yeah, that was a very, very strange thing. And I think my friend's mum is not one of these people that sort of makes things up, or they're kind of very down to earth people. But that was, yeah, it's a story she's told me a few times, and it's very scary every time she tells me it.
It is indeed. Tim, yeah. I thank you so much for joining us all the way from the UK. I appreciate it, and thank you for listening and being a part of the campfire.
No problem. Thank you, Jim.
Liz joins us once again from Connecticut, and she was on the show a few weeks back, and we're so glad to have her again in 2017 here. And she is going to tell us about a strange experience that her and her husband had. And she says it creeps him out. She's not sure it's anything, but she's going to tell us and get our opinions. Liz, welcome back to the program and tell us what happened.
All right. Thanks. And Happy New Year again.
Happy New Year.
So this happened, oh, now it's been a few months, but it was middle of the night one night. You know, nothing during the day had happened, nothing strange. And not, like I said in my, the other time I called, nothing really happens to me, but this is just something that kind of stood out. It was the middle of the night. I'm asleep and I feel, my husband elbowing me, and mm-hmm. I hear him go like, Liz, Liz, Liz. So I finally wake up, and I mean, I'm exhausted. So I'm kind of like, oh my God, what do you want? I turn over, I look at him, and it's like pitch black in our house, except I can see kind of, you know, some light coming from the hallway. And so I turn over, I look at him, and I say, you know, what do you want? And he's kind of whispering to me. His back is to me from what I can tell, and it looks like he's like facing our bedroom doorway, which if you look out our bedroom, all you can see is like the bathroom door. Mm-hmm. There's no real view out of our bedroom. Mm-hmm. So he's turned and faced that way, and he says, do you see it? Or do you see anything? Or something like that. And I'm like, at first I got worried. I'm like, I thought he heard something. So I'm like, oh crap, did somebody break into the house? But then I'm like, well, the dog is still passed out asleep. Like there's no other sound. So I say, what? And he's like, do you see that? And I look out the door, and again, it's dark. All I can see is the bathroom door. There's like a blue light, like one of the electronics or something is on. So there's very dim light.
Right.
But I don't see anything. So I'm like, no, am I supposed to see something? And he goes, no. And then that's like it. He goes back to sleep. No more sound. I'm just like, what the heck is that? I go back to sleep because I'm like, why the hell did you wake me up if there's nothing there? And then the next morning I asked him, I'm like, do you remember this? And he's like, I don't remember that at all. I'm like, you asked me specifically, do you see that? And there was nothing. And he's like, no, I don't remember anything. Like, I don't remember waking up. I don't remember dreaming. He's like, I have no recollection of this whatsoever. And I'm like, 100%, you woke me up. I was awake. I was not dreaming. And you said this to me. And then the only thing I can remember, like thinking back about it, was the light that I saw at night. It was a blue light, and it looked like it was at the top of our ceiling, and it was blinking. And the more I think about it, there's nothing in our house that makes that light. None of the electronics make that bright of a blue light. Nothing is up towards our ceiling that would be making that kind of light. The way it was coming, it would have been like shining through our kitchen door the window in our kitchen door, and that not only has curtains, so it would be blocking any kind of light, but right. like there's just nothing from that direction that would have been emitting this bright blinking blue light, and I have no idea. So my husband got a little freaked out because he couldn't remember it, but jokingly he's like, oh, maybe the aliens are trying to talk to you and they zapped my memory so I don't remember. And I'm just like, I have no idea what the heck just happened. You just were talking in your sleep, and I have no idea what it was.
So
it's just very strange.
So you don't have any. So it sounds like to me initially you thought it was nothing, and the more you thought about it, you thought, well, maybe it was something.
Yeah, just because it was so strange. And like I said, when it happened, I was just so tired and kind of frustrated that I was awake for no reason that I didn't even, you know, the blue light didn't register. I was just like, whatever, it's the TV or something stupid. But then, you know, in the morning I checked, you know, nothing was left on. And the more I thought about it, it's like, no, nothing we have, even if it had been on, can make that bright of a blue light. And like I said, it looked like it was blinking right at the top of the ceiling. And I'm like, there's nothing there that we have that would be blinking or on or anything like that up on the ceiling like that. So the more I think about it, the stranger I'm just like, what the heck was that? And my husband has talked in his sleep only once before since we started dating. And this was years and years ago. And he said his mother was making peanut butter pancakes. So to go from, you know, talking right. basically nonsense in his sleep to having basically a conversation with me, it's very different. Mm. And it was just very strange.
Well, if anybody out there has any ideas, I'm not sure that I know what it is, but I'd be interested to see what other people have to say. And Liz, that's what this show is all about, kind of sharing these things. And sometimes people have a real solid idea, like that was Aunt Millie. And then sometimes people say, hey, has anybody got any idea? Maybe somebody will. Liz, thank you for joining us once again on The Campfire.
Thank you so much.
This episode of Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Casper. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost, and they're revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to you, the consumer. Now, I love my Casper, and I know that you will love it very much as well. If you're in the market for a mattress, well, go no further. Go to casper.com/campfire and enter the promo code campfire to get $50 off any mattress purchase, because not only is it a great price and a great deal, but it's an obsessively engineered mattress. It's made of supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. Now, you can buy it so easily online. Remember the bad old days where you have to struggle with a salesperson and you're all bundled up and you're trying to make a decision. Next 8 years of your life, you're going to spend a third of your life on this mattress and you have to make a decision in 5 minutes. Well, that doesn't make any sense. So Casper has kind of thrown that model out the window, made that obsolete. You can buy your Casper easily online and completely risk-free. In fact, Casper knows the importance of truly trying out a mattress. So they don't say 5 minutes in a showroom with some salesperson making you uncomfortable. No, that's not their way. That's old school. Casper offers free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period. That is a 100-day period, so you don't have to lie down in a showroom. And did you know, statistically speaking, lying on a bed in a showroom has no correlation whatsoever to whether it is the right mattress for you. That's why the Casper way is the new way. It is the better way. It is the way to shop for a mattress in 2017. Casper's mattresses are also made in the USA, and they provide free shipping and returns to the US and Canada. So if you purchase their mattress and you decide you don't like it, you're out nothing. Now, you can save an additional $50 towards your mattress purchase by going to casper.com/campfire and entering the promo code campfire. That's casper.com/campfire, the promo code campfire. And terms and conditions apply, but I got to tell you, you are going to love it because it kind of meets the Goldilocks standard. It's not too hard, not too soft. It's just right. You're going to love it. Casper.com/campfire. Use that promo code campfire. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks, Casper. Zachary is on the line from New York State, and he's been listening to us since Halloween. He found us over on the podcast app, and we're so grateful. And he has some stories about his family home, and we thank him for joining us. Zachary, welcome, and tell us what happened.
All right, thank you. So my grandpa bought 48 acres of land. It was probably about 50 years ago now. The land was an old farm property. There used to be an old house on the land, mm-hmm. and my grandpa's been trying to find remnants of it for years. And like, you can still find some old cow troughs on the land and barbed wire fence around the property, stuff like that. And so my dad built a house on the land when I was about 7 years old, and he stayed there many nights alone when we would be at our mother's house. And he never had any experiences or anything like that. And
right.
I didn't have anything happen to me until I was older, until I was old enough to stay home alone. So the first experiences that I started having was hearing footsteps. So when I'd be home alone, if I was downstairs, I would hear what sounded like someone walking around upstairs. So then I would go upstairs to check it out. And I would start hearing the same noise downstairs, like someone was walking around downstairs. So it always kind of felt like someone was there with me walking around. And I was never really home alone. So that was kind of strange. Yeah. And I got some more interesting stories about the footsteps.
Sure, tell us more.
One night, me and my brother were staying up late, and his room used to be in the basement. And where his room was in the basement, we were like beneath the dining room. And at that time, you could walk right through the dining room. There was an entrance at both ends. But at that time, there was like a cabinet in one of the doorways that held dishes. And so we were up late one night, and we heard someone get up walking around, like they were in the kitchen getting a glass of water or something. And then they made their way through to the dining room, and they walked into the dining room and walked right straight through it as if the cabinet wasn't there.
Ooh.
It was very strange.
Oh. Yeah, that'd get your attention.
Yeah, so at that point we knew it wasn't someone up in the house, it was something else. And this other story about the footsteps, a little bit scarier. So one day, it was a summer day, me and my girlfriend, we were the only ones home. I think we were skipping school playing hooky that day. And we were just hanging out in my room, which was in the basement at that time. And then all of a sudden, the dogs started barking like someone had come home or something, but we didn't hear the door close. And we were downstairs. We could hear someone walking around the kitchen. The dogs are still barking. So we started to slowly creep up to the basement door, half expecting someone to open it and yell at me for being home. And so we're sitting there at the bottom of the steps, you know, we can hear someone walking around the kitchen, dogs still barking, things are being moved around like someone's setting their stuff down. And we're waiting and waiting, and the steps come over to the front of the door. And after a couple minutes, they, you know, steps stop, the dogs stop barking, and everything goes back to normal. And then after a minute, we open the door, and there was no one there. No one had come home, and it was weird, and it was just like someone had been there, but there was no one there.
Huh, that is strange. So you think all this is connected back to the old house that was on that property?
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
You know, that is a wild thought that someone was there before and they decided to stick around and they made themselves known.
I got two more stories about some experiences, if you got
sure.
time.
Go ahead. Tell me.
Another one around, this happened the same time as the last one. It was another summer day, and we usually have all the windows in the house open because it's a country home. And my dad lives out in the middle of nowhere, so we're not really worried about anyone coming in or anything. So me and my girlfriend were outside hanging out, and we decided to go for a swim in the pool. So we started making our way over to the pool, and we walk by some windows that are open, and we hear a loud, like a shrieking scream come from inside the house. It was like a female scream, and there is no one around. Like, we're the only ones there. The closest neighbor is my grandparents, and he lives across the pond through the woods.
Right.
There is no one around to make this scream. So, you know, terrified, we just looked at each other and went to the pool deck and tried to figure out what it was, but I don't even think we went swimming. We definitely didn't go back inside until someone got home. That was weird.
And then you said you had one final one.
Yeah, this one's probably the scariest. So it was just me and my dad home this one time. I was probably about 14, and we had some old three-wheelers, and we decided to go for a ride. So we were riding them around in the back, the field area, and we take a quick break, and he says, you know, what do you want to do? And we decide to ride over to my grandpa's next door. So he rides over there, and I was like, well, I'll ride around for a few more minutes. So I'm riding around the field, and I take a look over at the house for whatever reason, and I notice my bedroom light is on, and I'm like, that's weird. I didn't leave that on. So I just slowing down, looking at it for a second, and then all of a sudden, I seen a figure walk by my window, and my heart like just started beating, and I had this like crazy feeling I never had before. I thought the house was being robbed, you know. I thought there was someone in the house. So I stop, and I'm staring at the window this time, and I just see the figure like walking around, you know, walking back and forth in my room, and my heart's just pounding and pounding, and I'm just sitting there just staring at it, and after a minute, it seemed like it noticed me watching it. So then it just stops, and it's in my window. I can see the silhouette of it looking out at me. I can't see its face, just it standing there. And then after a brief moment, it turned towards where my bed was, like bent over, picked up a sheet or blanket, and held it up in front of the window, blocking out the window so I couldn't see it.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I was terrified. I didn't even think it was a ghost. I just thought it was someone robbing the house. So I bolt over to my grandparents, and I frantically am explaining what I saw. And we head over there, me and my dad. He goes in the house, and I'm waiting outside. I'm expecting something bad to happen, like someone to come running out at me or something. And he was in there what felt like forever. And he finally came out after like 10 minutes or so, and he didn't find anything. And I almost didn't believe him. I thought that whoever was in the house was hiding in there still. So I go in and scaredly walk around and go into my room, and everything's fine. The blanket's on my bed, but my bedroom light is on. And I was, I don't know, it was a very unsettling night. I was still worried someone was hiding in the house. That one was, I don't know, unexplainable.
Now, does your family still own the house? Do you still go back there on occasion?
Yeah, my dad still lives there with my stepmother, and there's other siblings that live there too.
And do you think about it when you go back there? Are you kind of leery that maybe something else might happen?
Yeah, I definitely don't want to go back there alone. I won't go there unless there's other people there. I don't like being there alone still.
I do not blame you. Well, Zachary, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for sharing your stories. Be careful out there. And thanks for being part of the campfire.
Thank you very much.
Next up on the campfire is Livy from Alabama, and she's been listening for about a year, and she has, well, it's a bit of a disturbing story about shadow people and some other things that happen, and we certainly appreciate her being a part of the program tonight. Livy, welcome, and please tell us what happened.
Thank you. My first apartment that I moved into, one night I was always just asleep with my bedroom door open. And I faced the living room, and one night I was laying, I'm getting nervous. I was laying there, and I seen like a tall, dark figure walk through the living room and come back. It's like it was pacing, but I just figured maybe I just thought I was seeing things, so I closed the door. After that, I just kept sleeping with my door shut. I had started going to church, and I got into the church real heavily, and that's when things really started to pick up. I was kind of, the bishop at the church I was going to was trying to get me to get baptized, but I wasn't ready at the time. So this one particular night, I had the craziest dream. I was seeing evil, I can see evil spirits push kids in front of cars. Like, these kids was getting hit in front of cars.
Oh, my.
And, right. So, in the dream, I grew up in the Catholic church. In the dream, I go to the church to go speak to the father. So, when I go into his office, before I can even get out what it is I'm trying to say, we just hear this voice. And she says, she's for me. So I come out the his office, and it's this lady. She looks like, you know how they describe the people from the Bible days? She right. had on that attire, and she was
oh my.
Like her complexion. She just looked like one of the statues you'll see in the churches. She was very pretty. She had like an olive complexion. And I was trying to tell her what I was seeing, but she was just like, don't speak. And it's crazy, I don't know why, but you know the magnets that you can put on refrigerators, the alphabet? She had that, and she starts spelling out all kind of crazy stuff, and it was just too much for me, and I got nervous, and she came around the desk and she grabbed my hand, and it was like she just stared dead into my eyes.
Oh my.
And I just start shaking, and she just, like, I was leaning backwards. Like, I was leaning back. And the more I leaned back, the more she leaned forward. And so I woke up, and right then and there, I was just saying, I don't know why. I don't know if this dream was to tell me that I should get baptized. But when I woke up, and I was just like, okay, I'm going to get baptized. I don't know what it was about that dream. Was when I woke up, I said, I'm ready to get baptized. And whatever it was in my front room came into my room, and I just heard a voice say, whatever you do, do not turn around. It just felt like it was like on my neck.
Oh my.
So I just stayed there praying, and I was holding my crucifix. Now, once after I got baptized is when they got worse. Like when I would pray, like sometimes I would pray in my front room, mm-hmm. I would feel it come stand like in the doorway to the point that I could turn around and I knew exactly where it was standing.
Oh my.
It did not like it, and it started coming into my room. I've always suffered from sleep paralysis when I was little, but right. I've heard callers say they saw things. I never saw anything. But this time, when I had my sleep paralysis, I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up, and he was standing there, and it was like a tall shadow figure. You really couldn't see. It didn't have a face, but it's like, each time I blink, it was like he would get closer, leaning over into the bed, like he was always almost nose to nose. And I'm getting, that dream, but it did something to me. I just, I didn't know what to do, because I just closed my eyes, and I started praying, and I had woke up. I end up, after that is when it got worse. I couldn't sleep. I had to sleep with a Bible on my bed.
Oh, my.
And one night I just woke up and I just told him, I just said, yeah, real loud, you're not going to scare me in my house. I end up moving. And the next place I went to, it was, I used to see things run past me. And I used to try not to let people, if I had company, I'd try not to give it attention. I told my mother about it. She said, if you see it, just, you know, say, plead the blood of Jesus, or just say Jesus, and don't entertain it. So
right.
It used to be hard to have company for them to see me, you know, like always turning my head. I don't know if it was like a little animal or something. I don't know. It just run past my feet. I felt there was something there, but it didn't put a fear in me like the prior place.
Right.
But one night I woke up in sleep paralysis. I hadn't had sleep paralysis since that one incident with the shadow person. So when I instantly woke up, I instantly said, oh, bleep, in my head, because I knew I was scared. I didn't know what was about to appear in my,
sure.
I didn't know what was about to happen. So I was laying on my left side, and I had my back to my door. And all I felt was the side of my bed went down like someone sat on it. And sleep paralysis, you can't do nothing. So I'm just laying there with my eyes open, like, I don't know what to do. I can't move. And I just, something, it just came over me and poked me on my shoulders so hard. I jumped up out the bed and ran out the room. So I don't know if it was, like, if whatever it was in that apartment knew I was scared and got me out of my sleep paralysis. I don't think it was trying to harm me. But I just to feel the side of your bed go down and you lay in there and you know ain't nobody else in your house with you. That
can be frightening. My goodness. Now, is this continuing to this day, or is all that kind of stopped?
At the place I'm at now, I don't feel anything. But when I first came, I would see like something run past. But I've learned to not entertain it. Like I try not to pay attention. Like one time I was at work and I didn't want people to think I was crazy, but I felt that tap on my shoulder again because I turned around like, what? And everybody was just looking at me. And I was just like, oh, like, okay. I had to try to play it off because I swear I felt something tap me on my shoulder, that same poke. And it was like a poke, like the boniest fingers. Like I can still feel it. It hurt it. They did it with like a jab.
Wow.
But it made me pop up and run out.
Well, you know, that's scary, but it sounds like, you know, it's subsided, and that's a good thing. And, you know, people say that there's good, and I believe there's a lot of good out there. And I believe maybe there's some maybe not so good out there as well. And maybe that's what you experienced. Libby, thank you for being a part of the campfire tonight.
Thank you.
Next up is a return caller, Matt from South Carolina, and he always has great stories to share with us. And today is no exception. You know, one of the things that I find most comforting are these idea of signs from those who have passed. And there may be a couple of examples that Matt has to share with us today. Matt, welcome back to the program and tell us what happened.
Thanks, Jim. I'm glad to be back on. I'm going to do one of those stories that, you know, the P word that people don't want to, you don't like to mention sometimes. As in poignant. Anyway, what happened to me at work, and actually I'm outside walking my same circuit or a different circuit that I do. I work at a federal complex where it's a huge campus, mm-hmm. and I always vary the way I walk. It's big enough for me to do that. And a lot of times when I'm working on a kind of a boring project, I'll have going in the background, I'll have a TV show. And at the time, this was a few weeks ago, I was watching Dr. G, Medical Examiner.
Right.
And case after case had to do with people dying of heart failure and pulmonary edema. And it was just one after another. And it was just really getting me down. So I needed to take a break. And I was walking along. And I saw some little white thing, in the field. Now this, where this, complex is nowhere near, a golf course. The only kind of recreation is kind of forced recreation where, recruits have to do calisthenics.
Right.
There's nothing other than like running and doing pushups and stuff. And I see a little white thing in the road, and I look a little closer, and I see it's actually a golf tee.
Huh.
And I was like, what is this doing here? And it kind of got me out of the funk of being just really depressed. And a big reason why it got to me is because I, about 7 years ago, my father-in-law passed away, and then a few months after that, my really good friend did, and they had both died of heart failure and or related to pulmonary embolism, which is when a clot gets in your lung,
right?
Goes to your lung. And with my buddy, I actually witnessed his death.
Oh my.
I drove him to the emergency room against his wishes. When he called, he said, there's something wrong. And I wanted to call 911 for him. He's like, no, just come over here. And when I saw him, I knew, because I used to do medical simulations, that this was serious. And I figured it was actually closer. He's just over the bridge from the hospital for me to drive him there. And one of the things I said, I regretted, because I think it made him frightened. Right. And I didn't mean to. I was trying to keep him calm.
Right.
But I literally, when we got pulled up through the drive-thru or through where the ambulances dropped people off, I think I witnessed his passing when the guys came and got him. So anyway, this was weighing really heavily on my heart. And anyway, I picked up the golf tee and I looked at it. I'm like, wow, that's really weird. And I kept walking. And I actually just took the golf tee. Instead of keeping it, I set it like on a curb somewhere.
Yeah.
And I kept walking. And I came to this other area. And I'll be damned, but sitting on the edge of the pavement in the grass was a second golf tee.
Huh.
And I'm like, well, it's crazy enough that I find one golf tee. But to find two is just ridiculous. And then it struck me, and I couldn't help but smile. This warmth came across me because these were both signs from my father-in-law and from my buddy. With my buddy, he was a genius, and we called him. He was like a real life Forrest Gump. He got products in the J. Peterman catalog because he was too dumb to know that you can't just pick up the phone and call Jay Peterman and Jay Peterman answers. I mean, and Jay Peterman is a real guy. I didn't even know that.
Everybody thinks it's just Jay Peterman from Seinfeld. Yeah.
But I mean, he's the kind of guy that would just stumble into these things. I mean, he met Kissinger, he met Bill Clinton, just randomly. Anyhow, he was an inventor and he was an avid golfer and he invented golf clubs designed for a golf ball. So he was poor. He never prospered from his inventions because basically they'd be stolen or whatever. And every last minute he had, he was on the golf course. And so that was the second tee. And the first tee I associated with my father-in-law, because believe it or not, my father-in-law died on the fifth hole. The local golf course.
Oh my.
And he would take every Friday off and be playing golf. And when I found the first tee, I thought it was interesting. I didn't quite put it together. And the second one was kind of like, Matt, you dummy. It's a sign. That was a sign from him. And here's a sign from me. And I just felt this warmth and all the sadness I had from watching seeing case after case of people dying of heart failure, it comforted me. And I just, that's the only thing I can explain. There's no other reason why I would find two random golf tees at a place where there's nobody with golf clubs or anything. And not, you know, just, that's the only thing I can think. And the message is especially poignant to me because just, let's see, 3 days ago, my mother-in-law had a heart attack. And thank God she's okay. But I took it, and maybe it was my father-in-law that had some intervention. But I took those golf tees that I found as a sign from the other side that you know, they were okay, lighten up, and also because I had the personal feelings of guilt that I did something wrong or I didn't make my friend's last minutes as good as I could have, or maybe I didn't drive fast enough to the ER, or I didn't get him to get in the car. I had to really convince him. I took it as a sign of saying, it's okay. It's not your fault. So that's what happened to me just a few weeks ago.
You know, it's one of those things where I think most of us, once you reach a certain age and you've lost friends or loved ones, or you know, and they can be one and the same, that you remember a sharp word or something that you said and think, oh my goodness, I wish I would have never said that. What was I thinking? And it is a tough thing to deal with and to kind of get that sign and that reassurance that, you know, we're good. that has to mean a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely did. It changed my mood for the rest of the day. I just was laughing. I was like, what a great joke. And then they both had great senses of humor. And I'm like, what a sign, you know?
Thanks for tuning into the campfire. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. And please tell your friends, tell your neighbors. Storytellers, thank you so much for your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. And if you love this show and you want to have more people hear about it, there's one thing you can do more than anything that will help, and that is to subscribe. Hit the subscribe button wherever you may listen. If it's iTunes or if it's the podcast app on your iPad or iPhone, maybe it's Google Play, maybe it's TuneIn Radio, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to us when they give you that option. Some things don't. Some don't. You can just listen. But most places give you the option to subscribe. Do that. That's number one. Number two is really rate and review. And really, review is the most important thing. Writing two or three sentences about why you love the show, kind of to get the perspective of the listener. So people can say, yeah, you know, Jane said that's a great show. That sounds like a reasonable person to me. I'll give it a try. That would be a great help. We thank you so much. And we'll talk to you next time around the campfire. And as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.